Well, kia ora,
You're
Donna. Thank you
welcome.
for having me again. Really pleased to have and happy to talk about this with you and your listeners. Because, look, if I was to give a very provocative opening statement here on top of what you've already shared with the listeners here, Donna, I would say that the risk here that this consultation poses is to take all of that potential value to Māori away, to flush it down the toilet, and to replace it with something that won't work for New Zealand and, in fact, costs us all billions.
Oh man, I couldn't agree with you more. Andrew, can you just tell us a little bit about the Carbon Forestry Association? Like, what is the name of your association and why were you formed?
Really happy to talk about that. Look, we are the Climate Forestry Association. We're a new organisation. We've only formally existed since March this year. And we're set up to work with the good people such as Te Kapunga Jews in the Ngā Poatane Group, the National Māori Forestry Association. We're alongside other large forestry entities that directly do planting, alongside some of the consultant set and alongside some of the environmentalist set. So our organisation is to bring all of those voices together and provide an expert, independent voice for what we do well here, which is sequestering carbon in trees, using the wonderful ability of our forests in order to be able to meet our climate challenge, and also talk about how forestry can do better for all of New Zealand's interests and provide more resilience in our landscapes.
Andrew, I'm a great supporter of Ngā Poatane. I've been supporting them right from the beginning. You know, it was overdue for Māoridom to form its own association of Māori foresters, you know, and the fact that Te Kapunga went through a rigorous process of having regional meetings, well advertised, and getting, you know, the landowners, local landowners on board. I just think the process that he's taken us through has been fantastic. And, you know, they just finished their first ever conference, or Māori Foresters Conference, that was really about asking our people, what does a national Māori forestry strategy look like? So they've just finished that. So I'm really happy that he's involved with the organisation, and I know of other large interpine, you know, you've got other Māori foresters who are involved in carbon forestry, climate forestry as well. So that's fantastic. Now, Andrew, turning to this, back to this document, I call it the blank document because I found it most frustrating. Can you just tell us what you think, what is it all about? Is it actually just about ETF for forestry, or is it something, is there a more radical agenda underlying this document?
That's a really good question, Donna, and some of which I just have to give you some informed guesses about, and some of which is very clear in terms of this document. The government and Minister Shaw from the Greens is preoccupied with a concern that we as a country are not doing enough to change gross emissions. Now, gross emissions are actually the smoke out of the top of the smokestack, the exhaust out of the back of our car. It's the actual emissions that go into our economy. And their concern is that not enough work is being done to decarbonize that particular set of things. Now, the fear that they have is that by using forestry to net off those emissions, that we're taking too much of a free hit, that the price of forestry offsets is too cheap, and that therefore we're discouraging organisations from doing the hard yards to actually cut the gross emissions. Now, that's their argument. That's their fear. I think that they're massively overstated, and that in actual fact, trying to cripple forestry and its ability to net off these emissions isn't what the experts internationally say, is ecologically unwise, is not how the real world works in terms of gross emissions, and that we just simply can't afford this preoccupation with cutting gross emissions because it'll cost us billions, it'll cost us jobs, and it'll cost all of us in the back pocket thousands.
So there, Am I correct in saying, because this is what I took from the document, that really what it's about is government taking control of the market? Is that, that's the key, isn't it?
That's where all of the roads lead to in this. Because James Shaw and the government thinks that they can do a better job of running the economy than everybody else, of running our household budgets and running our climate commitments better than everybody else, they want to seize control of a lot of it, and they've detailed four options for how they can seize control and make it happen for us. And there's just the evidence for that, and you've waded through the document, Donna. Let me assure you that despite how dense it is, there is actually very little credible detail here about how they propose to do it in a way that stacks up without causing massive damage to the economy and households and setting us backward in terms of our climate commitments.
Yeah. The key thing that I took out of it was, firstly, that they want to control the market and that they're going to basically confiscate value. They're going to take value. And that's of concern to me because of so many Māori landowners have now put trees in the ground, you know, and by this mechanism, not allowing them to get the full value of what they're planting. So that was a concern. You know, what and you just said that they haven't actually presented any evidence for this. So, I mean, how did they justify? How does the review, what's in the review that justifies these dramatic changes? I mean, to actually take over the market and to take the value of landowners. I mean, it's not only Māori landowners, but all landowners, to steal their value. What possible justification have they put forward for this in the review documents?
I'm sorry to say, Donna, they haven't. There is only economic theory behind this. There isn't really any evidence for it at all. I have scoured the document trying to find what actually they're basing this on. Maybe it's science. Maybe it's actual evidence in terms of what's happening out in the market. Maybe it's conversation that they've had with some of the large emitters in terms of the barriers. Unfortunately, I don't see any of that. All I see here is a little bit of desk-based research from people down in Wellington that have come up with a model. And they are going to impose that model on the rest of us with four options that are detailed, all of which will have real-world consequences that will take us backwards. I simply don't think it's good enough. As an evidentiary base here, that this is actually quite an embarrassment to put out into the public eye to justify something that could be this damaging on this little evidence.
Yeah. I mean, it's just incredible. I take the figure that was given to me early on and that I derived from the infometrics. The first lot of figures that they put out, that, you know, if only a quarter of Māori land is planted, then that is worth $16 billion. Now, that figure's kind of stuck in my head. $16 billion is going to do a hell of a lot to relieve rural poverty. You know, and on the other hand, I'm reading another document which says that there are 66,000 children in severe hardship. Like, there's not enough food, for example, that go to school without shoes and proper clothing, that unless they get fed at school, they don't eat properly. You know, the parents can't afford the electricity that already. And then there's 150,000 in total children in New Zealand who are already suffering hardship. So I'm just thinking, how do you justify this, taking away from rural communities a potential $16 billion that could actually help those families? And I'm just wondering if you can enlighten me. What are the four options? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel in the four options that the review documents propose?
No, actually, Donna, before we talk about the four options, I want to make your $16 billion a bit worse. I'm sorry. $16 billion is absolutely the number that I've heard from a number of Māori forest owners in terms of the potential for Māori out of the ETS as it currently stands. On top of that, earlier this week, we originally went out with a number that said we think there's a $5 billion cost to the economy specifically from this review process. in actual fact, over the last 2 days by diving into some of the detail that we've had to create, because it's not in this document, we think that number could actually be as high as 15 billion and counting. So you've already got 16 for Māori.
Wow.
We've got 15 for the rest of the economy. On top of that, too, you have to add in the amount that the Treasury has said in terms of buying offsets of other people's forests from offshore.
Yeah.
And that could be up to another $25 billion. Now, my math is a bit shaky, Donna, but we've got 16 plus 15 plus 25. If I'm not mistaken, we're up to pushing close to $60 billion now. That's a hell of a lot out of all of our pockets. That's half the annual size of the New Zealand economy, nearly. And that's just getting started in terms of how damaging each of these four options could be. And that's why I just think that this is just vandalism, frankly. And I've said that earlier this week as well, that off the back of just an ideological argument, off the back of desk research, off the back of models and nothing in the real world, we could just cost ourselves literally billions of dollars. And specifically Māori, the opportunity, the once-in-a-generation opportunity to transform the use of lands. I actually think
it's...
Yes, let's talk about
the
options here, because I'm going to be a bit provocative here, because there are four options that the government is consulting on in the document, right? And I will be a bit provocative in terms of describing them. You asked me whether there's light at the end of the tunnel on all of them, and I'm afraid to say there is no light here, Donna.
Mm.
Each one of these options, unfortunately, involve a different, poor outcome for New Zealand. But option one involves restricting the number of credits that are available to the market, and that by making them scarce, that will force the price of them up and force companies to do their gross emissions differently. And what that one will mean is that rather than having Māori forestry and all other forestry get the fair share of the credits that they plant, that the government will be turning some of them down and essentially not allowing you to sell them. So that first one essentially involves rapid decarbonisation through making artificial scarcity in the market. And that one we don't like the sound of, because essentially it's turning off the potential of forestry to help solve our problem.
Andrew, just on that, isn't one of the outcomes of that, the fact that you have fewer credits? We are not going to reduce our emissions. You know, we already know, and I have a model myself that shows that there's no way that our emitters are going to be able to meet those drastic targets without imposing huge costs that they're going to pass on to households. That's what I figured out of the document myself. Am I right on that?
You're dead right in terms of that, right? Essentially, again, the theory that they have here, the theory that Minister Shaw and the government is putting in front of us, is that all we have to do is just give these big emitters a kick up the backside and they'll get going in terms of cutting gross emissions. It is not that simple. And if you force them to do it faster than you already are, the impact of that is less power available, less fuel available, more expensive costs to households for both of those things, more expensive costs for everything else that is reliant on those things, which is pretty much everything, including the food that we're already paying more for at the moment, because every supermarket runs on power and every truck that delivers to those supermarkets runs on fuel. That's where that $15 billion impact that we're talking about comes from.
Yeah.
In terms of how forcing things to move faster actually results in hitting our back pockets.
Yeah, yeah. And it just, you pass that on to households. That's like ordinary little families, you know, like mine. And my power bill goes up, the cost of my petrol goes up because government has decided to squeeze out the emitters and make them make their transitions quicker. And so all these businesses are going to do, if they want to stay alive, either they're going to have to close their doors or they're going to have to pass those costs on to the customers. And that those customers are families like, you know, you and me. It's just ordinary people going to, and what we're going to have to pay. So, you know, option one is a tragedy. Does it get any better? What's option two?
Let's talk about option two, and I'm sorry to say that there's not much light here too. But this one's a little bit illusionary, actually. This one you can take as seeing light. What the government thinks is that what we could do instead of option one is perhaps open up our market to international buyers. So on the face of it, that sounds like a good thing. Perhaps if the government doesn't want to buy our forestry credits, that we'll be able to sell them to someone else. But if you look at the devil in the detail, it is a wonderful idea, actually, but not with the way they're going to do it, Donna. Because what they say here is that before we're able to sell them, that the government has sucked out the real value of those credits by counting them against our national targets. So while we're able to sell them to other people, we're able to sell them only once the government has sucked the life out of them to the fact that they only exist on paper. They've effectively confiscated the value of those credits and left us only with the shell. That it is that bad. It's like an egg with no yolk that would be selling on the market. So don't get sucked in by that one. The ability to sell something like hollow eggs is what you're left with on here.
Well, that's incredibly dumb. if we've got $16 billion worth of carbon credits, this is on Māori land, then we want to be able to sell those credits overseas. If the government don't want to buy them, well, why can't we sell them overseas at their value? You know, one ton equals one unit, and the price that overseas buyers are willing to pay. What is that in any of the other two options?
No, unfortunately, it's not. Like, the idea of opening us up to the international market is a wonderful one, actually. But it has to be at the real value of those credits, and it has to be at the value of allowing other countries to count it against their targets. Like I said, it's hollowing them out and then letting us sell the husks. And if we are only able to sell the husks on the international market, then they're going to be worth cents on the dollar, simply put. So that one...
I mean, would we bother? Why would Māori bother planting any more if government is going to take the value of it and our landowners aren't going to get the true value? I mean, those trustees are not going to agree to planting unless the value of that comes back to their shareholders. That's the whole point.
I'm going to give you a bit of a spoiler alert here, Donna. By the time we get to the end of these four lists, you'll see four options that involve all of those decisions looking very questionable. All of these options send Māori backwards in terms of the value and the investments on their land and the utilisation of that land. That's what's such a tragedy out of this, that Māori has offered to do the heavy lifting of using their lands to help meet our targets, and every single one of these options kicks sand back in your face in terms of, no thank you, we'll take care of it from here. That is what is most disgusting.
That's the land grab.
I don't whakapapa Māori, Donna, and I don't want to put words in Māori's mouth as a result here, but I think that this is a modern-day confiscation of value from Māori, and I just find it astonishing.
I'm just wondering whether, you know, and options three and four, do they go on in a similar vein?
Look, I'll give you a very brief take on this. I'm afraid not. Option three involves effectively a partial nationalisation of the market. What do we mean by partial nationalisation? This is when confiscation gets a little bit more honest, actually, in terms of the ideas, and it's not without any gloss on top of it. But essentially, what we'll see here is that the government will cap the supply of units in terms of a percentage of forestry that can be used, and reduce the amount of land that's available to be used by forestry, and restrict how long those credits can be used for. So all of those things effectively nationalise the price of those credits. You'll have the government tell you what they are worth, and that won't be what they'll actually be sold for by the government out the other side.
Right, and the profit then taken by government.
That's it. That's where option four takes us as well, and even more dramatically. In option four, they actually split up the ETS into two. And what you have is on one side, a market for giving them credits out of the likes of forestry, and a completely separate market out the other side where the government sells them on to people that need those credits. And sitting in the middle of those two markets is the government, hoovering up cash rather than allowing it to go to the parties who have done the heavy lifting.
Yeah.
So that one, if I was to be provocative, is where you've just got government swooping in and taking control of it all.
Yeah. You know, Andrew, I've met with Minister Shaw on a number of occasions and pointed out that the statements he was making last year, which was about nationalisation, and all the things that are in the document, he's actually been talking about them for quite a few months now, at least 8 months to my knowledge. And so has Dr. Rod Carr, the chairman of the Climate Commission. They've both kind of gone down this path. So I've made it my business to meet with them and pointed out the impacts, potential impacts on Māori land. And in spite of this, everything that we asked them, not just me, but Ngā Pauatane has met with them, the iwi chairs, technical advisors have met with them, the iwi leaders group has met with them. We've pointed out all this, we've all said the same thing. And in spite of that, they've still gone along as though we never said anything, as though we have no tongue, we have no voice. And they've gone ahead and put all the things that we feared they would put in, they've actually put them in, into one of these four options. And I just feel, what are we going to do to get through to the Green Party, who have got a Māori co-leader in Marama Davidson, who have got people like Huhana Lyndon, who's been the ex-CEO of one of the big forestry blocks up there, I think Taitokoro Forest, if I can remember correctly, who knows the stuff. And in spite of that, we've still got the stuff that's going to hit Māori so hard, right between the eyeballs. And I'm just so, I mean, I'm not happy that you have confirmed everything that I got from the document when I read it on Monday. You've just confirmed to me how bad it is. And so, I'm taking a bit of time tonight because, most Māori listening to this will be trustees on some block or other. Don't know much about land development, but my husband knows a lot. And, you're on multiple land blocks. I mean, I sit as a trustee on several land blocks, and I don't actually know that much about it. So our listeners out there, the probability that each one of them sits on at least one land block as a trustee is why I'm taking the time to get you, Andrew, to take us through this document. Look, in terms of the service that I've got to get on to, providing some templates for landowners, what's not provided in the document, and what are some more of the risks as you see if what is provided in these documents are actually, come to fruition later on?
Oh, Donna, that's a really important question right now. And I'm going to take a little while to answer it. The challenge that we have around here is, as you've already pointed out, Rod Carr at the Climate Commission and James Shaw aren't listening. Māori have talked to them a number of times. And in fact, you will know this well, Donna, and your listeners should know it too, that Māori were promised co-design of this particular review, and that was not delivered to in the manner that was expected. And instead, we have this come out in this particular form, which is too much of a surprise. Now, how do we get them to listen is the big question.
Yep.
What we have here is all of this desk-based analysis that doesn't reflect the real world. In terms of what that template has to say, I think that we have to remind our minister, Minister Shaw, and remind Rod Carr at the Climate Commission just what's at stake from all of these Māori land blocks, just what the potential is, just why Māori have committed to that opportunity. Because it's not just economic return, it's doing what's right for the land, and it's doing what's right for our climate too, as well as the economic opportunity. That would be point one that I'd suggest. Why are we here and why are we doing this? The second point that we'll be helping with here is how this actually works in the real world in terms of how gross emission reductions are done and how forestry doesn't compete with that. And the third point we need to make is just that they haven't done their jobs properly in terms of accounting for what this will mean to everybody in Aotearoa's back pockets, what this will mean to everybody in Aotearoa's economy, and what this will add up. And we have to put up our hands and say, we don't think this is necessary, and this should not be done for us in this manner.
Yeah.
I think the real challenge, though, too, is that we've got to come up with a better idea. And the better idea is going to be in front of us.
You know, one of the things that got up my nose was that it seems to me that they're proposing a kind of welfare system here where they're going to look after those who are most impacted, who are Māori, of course. But whether we get whether the welfare is directed to emitters or whether it's directed to those who will be, carry the burden of these changes, I'm not sure. Can you enlighten us on that? What did you take from the document about the welfare proposals?
Donna, if there was any part of the argument where I laughed out loud, unfortunately, was that section. If there is any part of the document that is so light on detail, it is that very bit. There is maybe half a page where it sits there and goes, oh, this might hurt a little bit. Well, we might do some things to help people out. I just find it astonishing that even in that defence, that it's sorry for my language, a half-assed job in terms of making the case. But why do you need it too? In exchange for confiscating $16 billion of Māori able to look after themselves.
That's right.
In exchange for an unspecified amount of help from the government that gets half That's a right. page of, or we might think about it later. That is just so pathetic.
Yeah, that's right. We don't want welfare. We actually want the earnings from our land. We don't want your welfare. On page 61, the thing that jumped out at me was them saying that those who will be most impacted from climate change and from these changes are Māori and Māori landowners. They actually say that, and yet they carry on as though, oh, it's okay. You know, we'll provide some kind of welfare. And as you say, half a page, but they don't actually say what. And my thinking is, we don't want welfare. We actually just want to get our assets working for us. And, you know, one of the risks of the document, as I see it, is just the impact it's going to have on investor confidence. I mean, Māori have problems anyway getting investors to look at, you know, investing in Māori land. But this was one area where the investors were, you know, have actually, they have partnered with Māori and are already investing on this. But what we're hearing back now is that the investors have lost confidence in the sector and they're just not interested at the moment. So that's the risk just of having this document out and you know, just out there. So, you know, I don't know how we win on this, Andrew. What do you think is the way forward? I mean, they haven't made their case. You know, you're right. It's light on detail. There's no figures. It's like they're going to get away with this rubbish because it's only Māori, or it's Māori in the main who are going to be impacted. So they may actually get away with it unless we can get enough Māori to make submission and then have those submissions brought into the light of day. Because what they've done in the past when Māori have objected hugely is not made those submissions public and actually just summarise what's in them unless you go through a tortuous OIA process to actually get hold of them. So either way, we're going to be gazumped on this. And I just think that, you know, what we're doing tonight in raising this issue and in, you know, taking this on the road to Māori landowners and in developing some draft what do you call them, templates for them to make submission. Because, you know, it's a very short process that we're, time limit that we're working with as well. You know, so what do you think is our way forward? What is the Climate Foresters Association? How are you helping your members get their submissions together, and what are you advising them to put in those submissions?
Oh, look, I'm going to just dig into that point about timeframes just a little bit here too first, Donna, because the real shame about this is that this has been developed in secret for nearly a year, actually.
Yep.
And that we're given 8 weeks, 8 weeks to turn around on what we think of it. Another disgusting attribute about this process. I'll tell you right now, actually, that there is one easy thing that Māori can do. And that is, unless you think the government is going to give $16 billion in welfare to Māori, then this is a worse deal for you in terms of how you lose your lands. It's that simple.
Yeah.
The value to the Māori economy has been alone, let alone the other bits that we were already talking about, the other 15, the other 25, and the other costs that will still be to come. Unless government's going to give you $16 billion, you are worse off on all of these proposals. So the first and easiest thing that anybody can do is sit there and say, no thank you, no deal, we are better off with the way things work right now.
That's right.
The second thing you can say is, where is your evidence? Where is your proof that we will be better off than the status quo? No decision should be made for us that doesn't have evidence about how it'll bring in probably at least better than $16 billion as well, or show us your working in terms of how you think this will work better than doing forestry ourselves. And then the third thing I think you should say is that all of these options disrespect Māori investment, disrespect Māori ownership of our lands, disrespect Māori choices in terms of how we lose our lands, and that it is not government's place to come in and confiscate the value of those assets or the potential of those assets to contribute to our climate objectives. What we'll be doing in the background here is developing some alternative ideas, and we'll absolutely share them with you, Donna, and with anybody else in Māori forestry that would like to see them. They are going to take some work, and we're going to have to work really quickly here. But right now, today, my suggestion is to anybody who is listening to this that unless you believe that there is $16 billion that James Shaw is going to write a check to you for, and if you do believe that, I ask you to reconsider gently, then you are better off saying, no thank you, no deal, we are better off with the way things are.
You know, there's the $16 billion, which is the profit that Māori would get off their own lands by selling their own, you know, selling their property right, which is the carbon unit. That's just, then that's only on a quarter of our available land. If we planted half of that, that's $32 billion. Now, the changes that they're going to bring about are really going to impact on electricity, the cost of electricity, which already, you know, the Energy Hardship Committee reported back last month. And, of course, you know, the majority of those who suffer energy hardship, which simply means they can't afford to pay for power and they go without and they just stay cold. And they can't afford to use their stove and their lights. It is our people. It is Māori. And that energy hardship is just going to increase. So it's just more Māori experiencing more energy hardship, not being able to afford. That's what the end of this is going to be. Not going to be able to afford petrol, you know, to drive themselves to work, to drive the kids to school, to go and pick up their groceries. Like, it translates into kind of the simple things of life are going to be just that much more expensive for Māori families. So that's $15 billion that you estimated is going to be the cost of these proposals. That's added on to the $16 billion of loss of profit. And then the hardship that we're going to experience, our families are going to experience. That's the other thing that just really, I just can't see how Marama Davidson can look at Māori honestly and say that the Greens are doing their best for Māoridom. And I just think that this has been the fact that they've done this in secret. I was in the room with Sir Toby Curtis, who called the meeting in Wellington, with Te Taumata Forestry, led by Chris Inslee, and others went down, significant landowners like Alan Haranga was in the room, the northern landowners, foresters were in the room, the Arawa, the Tairāwhiti foresters were in the room. And James Shaw and Stuart Nash promised Māoridom that they would co-design. They promised us, and they haven't done it. And so for a year, they've done all of this in secret. And I just feel that Māori have been so badly served by this. We've done our best to raise these issues with Minister Jackson and with Minister Henare. And I just feel that they must have been overrided, because these are not Māori who would likely allow things to happen that hit Māoridom. And our belief is that this has been driven by Megan Woods and by David Parker as an electorate strategy for Minister Shaw to be able to say to his greenies, look, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to force the emitters to drive down the emitters. And he's just not going to tell them that actually Māori are going to bear the impact of this. But the fact that this is really just an election ploy to help the Greens back into Parliament, and that Labour's leadership, Megan Woods and David Parker have, and the Deputy Prime Minister, the Head of Treasury, is going to go along with this, just is really quite upsetting, you know, and that there's nothing we can do about it. Well, there's not nothing, but we're going to do a lot about it. Andrew, and you and your association, I know, are going to help us put together some great templates so we can get them out to Māori landowners so that they can have their say.
Absolutely right, Donna. Look, I do just want to add one other insult to all of these injuries on top of it, because we shouldn't forget that $25 billion that we might have to spend. Do you know what that $25 billion will be spent on as well? That's buying credits from overseas. You know where those credits will come from? They'll come from other people's forests. They'll come for us giving $25 billion for another country to plant some trees and to make value off their land. That's what's even more disgusting about this.
But so dumb. Why on earth spend $25 billion, and why can't they give that $25 billion and buy credits from off Māori land? I mean, does it stick in their throat so much that Māori might actually be able to, you know, not be on welfare, but actually benefit and profit from their own assets, the rubbish assets that have been left to us? That $25 billion, that really does stick in my throat. Andrew, I'm so glad you reminded me of that. Yes.
Who will be paying? The good people of Peru, probably. I've got no problem with the Peruvians. The Peruvians I've met have all been lovely people. But I don't know why we'd give the likes of the Peruvians $25 billion rather than allowing our own people here in Aotearoa to use their expertise, their experience, their hard-fought land, and their skill in terms of going out and making that money work here in New Zealand instead. It's beyond stupid to me that we would think that that's an acceptable outcome, to ask someone else to plant trees somewhere else in the world and to do our work for us when we are willing to do it ourselves.
Yeah, that's right. And do you know, Māori are fabulous foresters. I mean, that's why we work in the forestry industry, because I have met, since I've been working on this take of carbon forestry for the last 5 years, I have met people who have been in forestry all their lives and they're bloody brilliant at it. There are so many incredible Māori who own businesses. You know, they're foresters. They've got incredible gangs. This is our life. You know, this is our ngahere. You know, we say, you know, tangata whenua, people of the land, tangata wai, people of the water, and tangata ngahere, people of the forest. And that's who we are. So it's kind of like, it's a no-brainer to allow us to have this opportunity to grow carbon units on our land and, you know, earn the $16 to $32 billion ourselves, rather than spend $25 billion buying off the Peruvians and the Indonesians. You know, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. Look, Andrew, could I just ask you finally, if you could just say, what does government need to do to make the case? And what should we be calling for?
Well, I think that there is no case made here that is better than what you currently get. There is actually nothing wrong with the ETS as it currently works. And so the easiest thing that we can all be saying is, this deal will do for now. That you haven't made a case that is better than the way things currently work, that is better for our communities, that is better for Māori, that is better for our economy, and that is better for our climate. The ETS as it stands right now does this job well, better than these four options in this paper. Mm-hmm. So the onus is on you, actually, James Shaw and Rod Carr, to come back with a better idea than this, because this doesn't lead to better for anybody else.
Yeah. I have experienced a number of instances of racism in the public sector. We all have. But this one stands out. It really does. And I don't think that James Shaw sees this as a product of his racism and of the racism that's endemic in the Ministry for Primary Industries and in Te Rūru Rākau. But it really is. And racism is simply when one race thinks they are superior to another and takes the voice away from that other. And that's what's happened to Māoridom. We've had our voice taken away. We've had decisions made for us without any consultation, no co-design. We've been shunted to the side. And yet we are the number one foresters in this country. We have the best foresters. People who work in forestry are just amazing. And yet we have just been completely sidelined from that because that they think they're superior and they know better than we do. And so we have had our tongue taken out. But thank you, Andrew, for joining me tonight and being one of those Pākehās who believe that Māori can have our say and who is going to stand behind us as we fight this fight.
We'll be working together on this, Donna. We have to work together on this. And I'm so very appreciative for letting me come and talk tonight. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Ka kite.